Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Jake Shepherd, he is a founder and director at Synthesis. We speak to him every week. We share some of his wisdom. And this morning, we're actually going to be tackling what I think is potentially a very complex or difficult situation, and one that many of us have had to deal with on all sorts of levels. And that is the topic, self-pity or self-blame, the role of empathy. So every group, every person, every religion has been through times that they have been victims and they have been, they've had certain struggles. How do we deal with that? Does that become part of our identity? Do we take on the blame for that? Jews have seen this, this duality for many, many years, because when we came out of the Holocaust, of course, we were portrayed and we were victims. We were perpetual victims then. Well, perpetual meaning it went on for a while. But then the State of Israel was formed, and all of a sudden we had to live with that duality. It's a very, very complex area. And I feel if anybody can help us plot our way through that, it is Jake Shepherd. Jake, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Howard. I don't blame you for thinking 6:31. I think the sun's just come up. So,
and it's cold.
And it's cold, so I don't blame you.
Exactly.
So yes, you're right. I mean, I would say over the last 100 years or so, already starting with Karl Marx and communism, there's been a steady rise of what I'd call victimhood ideologies in the West. And more recently, if you're looking at universities, you've got the rise of grievance study courses at universities, and they really focus on blaming the other. So if you're looking at women's studies, so men and the oppressive patriarchy are to blame for all the evils of society. And then they go on to teach women self-pity. And then you have things like ethnic studies, which combines antipathy for whites with an encouragement of self-pity for the relevant ethnicity. So I want to contrast that quite sharply. And say that this approach of blaming the other is the very opposite of the Judeo-Christian approach that was historically adopted in the West. And we can call this approach really one of self-reflection, or maybe let's give it a harsh title, self-blame.
Okay.
And if you examine, the self-blame culture as it applies to the Jewish people, all you have to do is just look at Jewish history with any sort of a lens, and you see a fantastic example of people who should be filled with self-pity, and they should see themselves as the ultimate victim.
Right.
But when you actually look at the response of our sages and our rabbis, they've never really permitted the Jews to see themselves as victims. And on a personal level, I always was struck by the maxim that whatever bad happens to you, turn inwards, introspect. What am I doing wrong? Where can I improve? And it actually almost seemed quite bizarre,
Right.
And then when I saw the movie Forrest Gump, and there was a memorable scene with him jogging across America and stepping in dog poo, and basically the phrase shit happens came out of that movie. But that phrase of shit happens actually led me to believe that Forrest Gump could never have been Jewish, because it's almost as if you're always getting punished for something and you have to work out what it is you did wrong.
Right.
And on a national level, if you look at like things like Tisha B'Av, where we all like really get on the floor in the shul and we say Eicha, it's a lamentation of the destruction of the temples, and you're looking at the murder of so many innocent people. And the central question of that, how could this have all happened? What actually happened? And the surprising answer is that it was all our fault. We stole from one another. We were involved with immorality. We fell short of what God had really expected of us. So really, it's almost as if we ignore the historical reality that the temples were destroyed, by the Babylonians, the first temple, Babylonians, and it was destroyed by the Romans in the second. Yet they not blamed or vilified, actually,
right,
during that whole process. It's all introspective. And if you actually then look, you refer to the Holocaust, and effectively the establishment of the State of Israel, there was this massive debate, should we institute a day of remembrance, the Yom HaShoah, day to remember the Holocaust, and as a separate date. And the rabbis actually came out quite strongly against it. And the reason they came out against it is because they said, listen, we've really got a day of national calamity, and it's called Tisha B'Av.
Right.
And we should use that day. And in the end, the rabbis lost the argument, and we did establish a day of Yom HaShoah. But the question is, like, why were they against it? Like, didn't they care what happened to us? Like, where was their empathy for the Jewish people? And you can't even say they didn't have empathy.
And many of them had lived through it, and lost families, etc.
Exactly. So I actually want to suggest that the reason they were against it is because they didn't want Jews to see themselves as victims. And right. even for one day of the year, you don't want to right. view people, you don't want to view yourself as a victim.
Right.
And I think that was the central message, and the central message that you get throughout the way that the rabbis and the sages view, let's say, calamities and destruction that have happened to the Jewish people, is always introspect, always turn inward. So it's really the culture of self-blame, if you want to call it that. And I think it's important to try and then contrast that with looking at a culture of self-pity and how that's played out in the world.
The reality is, and you used women's studies and you used ethnic studies and you talk about anti-Semitism, there are perpetrators of this. And doesn't this non-focus on what's happened doesn't it give them a free pass? Doesn't it give somebody who's a racist or somebody who, you know, we know the story of gender-based violence in South Africa. Does this not give men a free pass if we say, okay, we're not going to focus on women being a victim of gender-based violence. We're going to try and turn that around a little bit. Doesn't that free men from that responsibility?
So, I mean, I think that's a good point, but I think to see that individual who perpetrated as evil is very different to seeing that class or that group that encapsulates that man as wholly responsible for all evil. And I think that's the distinction.
Mm.
So yes, holding somebody accountable is correct at an individual level. Holding whole aspects of society accountable because of some sort of oppressive nature of that class of people, that's where things become malevolent.
Mm. Mm.
And the way you see that is if you contrast that with the classic example of victimhood ideology, which is communism, where I'm defining communism really as the state owning the means of production. And the Russian Revolution of 1918 really established a state that was based explicitly on atheism, the rejection of God, and the claimed infallibility of rational thought. They said, here's a system, rational thought, we're going to work this out. And really, I would say communism is predicated on the same oppressor versus the oppressed narrative that you see all these grievance studies also predicated on. So in the communism's case, it's really the bourgeoisie oppressing the proletariat, i.e. the rich were to blame for all the ills of society.
Mm.
And even worse, even if you were related to, let's say, call it the former elite of society, you were classed as the bourgeoisie that needed to actually get put in their place.
Right, because the minute you become part of the oppressor, then you have there's no maneuverability, there's nothing to talk about. We saw that in South Africa with white monopoly capital, where that was actually used as a very specific strategy by Bell Pottinger and the Zuma group to alienate, to cause divisiveness and to alienate a certain sector of society. And by doing that, it meant actually that we couldn't deal with some of the real issues because it was all about opposition and contrasts between two different groups.
And I think that is the very real danger of creating a division in society like that. And what was quite interesting, you know, I always enjoy quoting from our books, but there's a great book by Alexander Solzhenitsyn called The Gulag.
Just to be clear, he doesn't swear, Jake, in the quote that you're about to read us. I have to say that Forrest Gump thing took us by a bit of surprise. You might be the first person to actually swear twice on radio in the course of one show. I'm just confirming that.
He's not going to say anything bad.
Okay, cool.
Well, it's actually quite terrible, actually, what he uncovers in the Gulag apocalypse. There you go. Right. And he traces out what actually happened with these gulags, these prisoner camps in Siberia, which is effectively a death sentence for most people to actually to be worked to death, because they didn't agree with the thought, or they were part of the class, or there was some let's say ill that they did. And he basically traces the whole origin of the Gulag system and the internal repression of the local populace back to the very doctrines that underpinned communist ideology. And it was this book, more than anything else, that actually brought down the Soviet Union, because it actually exposed it for what it was, as an ideology based on victimhood. And if you're a victim, you can justify the murder of millions of people on the basis of creating a utopia free of suffering.
Right.
And basically, so I've often heard people, you know, saying, you know, communism is great in theory. It's never been done right. I'm sure you've heard that
yes.
before. But
right.
unfortunately, history actually defeats this argument, because every time communism's ever been tried, lands right. up in devastation. So it's been estimated that the Soviet Union killed about 20 million, you know, with their drive to introduce communism. Maoist China, over 80 million people were killed. And if you look at the Pol Pot regime, it killed 2 million people.
Right.
And if you're looking for modern societies based on socialism and communism, look no further than North Korea and Venezuela. And look what fantastic places those are. So I want to say that actually, this history actually makes communism maybe the greatest catastrophe in human history. And when I respond to people who say, well, it's great in theory, I'll say, well, how many more lives is it going to cost? How many more millions of people do you want to die before you learn the lesson that ideologies based on self-pity and victimhood are actually pathological? And that's really something that needs to sink in.
Absolutely.
Because no good comes of those sort of ideologies.
Time is 8:47. I'm Howard Feldman. This is your Morning Mayhem, 101.9 Chai FM. Chatting to founder and director at Synthesis, Jake Shepherd. And we're speaking about victimhood and empathy. Zanati, your thoughts. Jake, I know that you've sometimes battled to hear Zanati when we speak through this medium, so I will just summarize what she's saying. I'd love your thoughts on 3-4-5-1-9 or 061-895-1019. And I guess, of course, that comes back to the very, very difficult question of race. Because, you know, if you look at what's happened in South Africa, of course, we've got a history of racism and turning people into, you know, this.
And
type
I think
of thing.
That on an individual level, you can empower yourself and you can rise up so that you are no longer.
Jake, as you see, you're there.
You don't see yourself as a victim, but you are still under the umbrella of being a victim, because, you know, whatever group that you're in is still vulnerable.
Correct. Okay. So, Jake, your thoughts on this?
Yeah. So I do think, obviously, you have to hold the individuals accountable for anything that they've done. I think that's the whole premise of our legal justice system. I think the danger starts coming in where you start grouping a whole bunch of people into the villain status.
Right.
And a whole bunch of people into the victim status. Mm. And then saying, all right, just by virtue of the group that you belong to, let's say the color of your skin, or let's say your sexual orientation, you are a villain. And I think that's where things become pathological. And then in terms of Ilana's question, well, how do you balance these two? How do you balance you know, this self-pity and the self-blame. And I think it actually comes down to empathy. And one of the things, I suppose, when you're looking at from a, one of the criticisms of the self-blame aspect is surely you need to show empathy, and showing empathy and standing up for the oppressed can't be bad. Surely that's noble. And so obviously then the criticism of the self-blame approach is, well, you just don't care. Where's your empathy? And you have people here being persecuted and victimized. And it sounds like you're going and blaming the victim. And that actually is a very real criticism. So the way to defend that, or the way to just put it into context, is to realize that the self-blame approach can only be adopted by the victim themselves. It's not something that somebody else can foister on them. So an onlooker has no right to tell a victim how they should feel. That's the first thing.
Right.
But I do think that the onlooker can still suggest pathological to see yourself as a victim, and that it's not a healthy option. So effectively what then happens when people do that is then they'll be attacked. They'll be told, listen, you're crass, you're uncaring, and you're out of touch. And the way to address this is to realize that we need to see ourselves and others actually on a time continuum. So any person or group really exists with a past, a present, and a future. And you have to take all of those into account. It's not good enough to fixate on the past alone. And what that means is, like, so if you're fixating on the past, so you're telling a person, listen, fixate on the injustices of the past. This means that they're going to feel better about themselves now, because they've got someone to blame for all of their misfortunes. And then, but the problem is, you're then telling them that the world can only get fixed when that villain stops misbehaving.
Right.
And maybe even I should go out and kill that person.
So in fact, actually,
to stop that.
Well, it's worse than that. Well, not worse than that, because I mean, that's obviously bad. But in fact, what it does is you become the power that the perpetrator had over you. They continue to have over you, even in the absence of oppression.
Exactly.
In other words, if you look at it from a Jewish perspective, if the Holocaust remained, and of course it does on some level, and I think that's possibly the answer, is that we are nuanced enough to live in a duality. We can be, see the past and the horror of where we, of what we experienced, along with, let's say, a powerful, state of Israel, along with building for the future, doing whatever we can to succeed and make the world a better place, etc. So all of these things can exist at the same time. The danger, from what maybe that I'm seeing you say, is if all we hold on to and all we focus on is that past, then that past forever controls us and forever ensures that we are subjugated to it. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Does that make sense to you if I put it that way?
Yeah, no, it really does.
And even more devastating, our children and our children's children. So the traditional Jewish approach has always been to focus on the future. So it's not about forgetting the past, because we've still got to learn how to become better and stronger. We've still got to establish the state of Israel to protect ourselves.
Right.
But it's about forgiving the past. Because if you fixate in the past and you can't forgive it, that's what undermines you. So I want to suggest that this attitude and approach actually of not forgetting the past, but forgiving the past and focusing on the future is actually at the heart of the resilience of the Jewish people. So I want to say that empathy is important, and it's important that we recognize and care about the injustices meted out to others. But I want to say that the empathy for the future self, the unlimited future potential in each individual, is far, far more important. So we need to have empathy, but realize that your empathy applies both to the person where they are now, but also to have empathy for the future potential inherent in that person and who they can become. And by you focusing on the victim narrative only,
you're
limiting the future.
Love that.
And you're losing the empathy for the future.
I think we just need to accept that we do need to live in a dual environment where you are empowering the individual, but at the same time, you don't give, you know, the
a free pass
to the perpetrator. That's the thing. So I think it needs to, there needs to be a balance.
It's a very, very interesting conversation, which we do need to leave right there. Jake Shepherd, thank you as always. You give us so much to think about and so much to digest. Hope you have a fantastic weekend.